Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to a preview edition of the Garden Report. We have a round two. Finally, Celtics wrapped their series up last Wednesday. Here we are on Sunday afternoon with 2 days still to wait until round two. And Cavs going to need every bit of that rest after going 7 games with the Magic. Biggest comeback in game 7 history, as Justin Rowan just told me. You didn't seem to have a ton of faith going into this one. Game six, ugly finish. And it's overall been a rough, this has been their season, Justin. Injuries, offensive issues, and just having to grind out this first round series. And it's a Magic team that didn't have any offense in their own right.
Yeah.
But they did it. And so here we are. This has been overdue. We haven't done this since 2018. And these teams have played some great games over the last couple of years, and the Cavs won the last one that they played in Cleveland. So this is going to be fun, I think. I like this matchup. I think these teams match up interestingly. We'll see how healthy Cleveland is, and obviously the Celtics probably won't have Kristaps Porzingis for the entirety of this series here. So where's your mind go first, Justin? What are you thinking going into this?
Oh, my goodness. Well, my mind, of course, goes to yet another edition of Tristan Thompson versus Al Horford. Bobby, we back.
That's on my list.
I can't believe it's 2024. And this is like, it's actually going to be in the notes, right? Like, it's going to be a part of this series. It's unbelievable that we're back here.
You know what the first thing I'm going to do, Justin, Tuesday morning? I'm going right to Cleveland shoot around, sitting down with Tristan Thompson and just hoping he says something.
Oh man, listen, you're never going to have to hope for Tristan Thompson to say something. If you were around him, he will be talking. I'm excited to have the series. As you said, I was very, very concerned going into this game 7. Obviously Donovan Mitchell has been dealing with this knee issue since the All-Star break, right? Like from a Cavs perspective, you know, they had that stretch without Garland and Mobley. You know, they go, well, actually, it started with a 3-1 stretch without Garland, Mitchell, and Mobley. Then Mitchell comes back. They go 9-3 from there. They get Garland and Mobley back. They go, you know, 9-1 to kind of complete the back half of that 18-2 stretch. Then it was the All-Star break. And after the All-Star break, we stopped seeing healthy Donovan Mitchell. He was out of the lineup. You know, Garland's been dealing with an ankle injury, and his back has been a major factor in this series. So that's been part of the equation. Jared Allen, the rib injury. Caris LeVert has been dealing with a bad knee. Dean Wade was out for the entirety of the Orlando Magic series, which really would have been nice to have, you know, a 6'10 two-way player that can stretch the floor and defend guys like Paolo Banchero. That would have been great. But like you said, you know, these teams have played interesting games in the past, and I'm excited to see what the series can be.
Yeah, it got pretty thin there late in the series when you have Marcus Morris starting, who another way to the series, the former Celtic, joining Cleveland on the buyout there. And Wade's going to be important. I think they need Wade to compete in this series. I think they're going to need Allen probably to push this series any long distance beyond 5. So how are those guys looking? Is there any chance we could see them in game 1, you think?
I'm skeptical. So the reports with Jared Allen, so, you know, anytime you're dealing with a bruised rib, you're always kind of running the risk that it can become a fracture. You're always one hit away, and, you know, you fractured ribs, there's other health complications that come with that. You know, it can lead to even a collapsed lung and stuff. We've seen that in the NBA. So, you know, obviously that's a concern. Reports are that, you know, he's having trouble breathing, lifting his arm above his head. So, you know, I'm not expecting him for, you know, the first two games of this series. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised and see where it's at. It's been a game time decision these last three games, just trying to, you know, go through the pregame warmups and just see if it's something that he can manage. You know, one advantage of playing Boston versus Orlando is, you know, there isn't a Mo Wagner who's probably going to target that rib the second he's out there on the court. Boston plays a little bit more of a clean game, so that's something I appreciate. No Kelly Olynyk, that's great. I'm happy about that. But, you know, we'll see. Dean Wade was ruled out for the entirety of the Magic series. He has been at shoot-around. People have mentioned that he seems to be getting a little bit more lift in his knee. Obviously, you know, the three part of that 3-and-D equation is important. So, you know, from a Cavs perspective, I don't know if we're necessarily going to see them in these first two games in Boston. But I think what you would be hoping for in kind of the optimistic scenario where the Cavs can extend this series is, hey, Boston hasn't played since Wednesday. Maybe they're a little bit rusty. You steal one of those first two games in Boston, and then it comes down to, you know, attempting to defend home court and maybe getting some reinforcements back in 3 and 4.
So let's start with the Cavs we have in front of us today. They start Okoro instead of Morris. Ends up being a pretty good move. 8 points plus 24. Mobley at center. We've talked about this a ton in the past, Justin, how you can just sort of involve him a little bit more directly in the offense when he's at that five spot. And that worked decently in this series. He didn't shoot great from the field in this series here, but, you know, finishes strong here with the 11 and 16. Overall, it was just a bit of a slog for them efficiency wise in this series. A brutal one for Mitchell off the bounce. And like you said, he's dealing with an injury, 4-3 assist to turnover ratio for him in this series. I think, you know, as much as people are probably going to look at Allen as a defensive loss, he just became such a hub of that offense, even in some of the Boston matchups during the year. We talked about that a lot too. And then, you know, I know Garland shot well from three during this series, but just a brutal start to this game for him as well. So this is a rough offensive series for Cleveland. It was a rough offensive season for them as a whole. And that's going to continue to be a tall task for them on that end of the ball, going against a Boston defense that, you know, throughout the course of the year was statistically as good as that Orlando unit.
Yeah, I think from a physicality standpoint, it's going to be a little bit different. You know, Jalen Suggs might be the only point of attack defender that's better than Drew and Derek White. Like, Derek White is, I think Derek White all around is as good defensively as Jalen Suggs. But, you know, his ability to be a help defender, come in with those blocks, those steals, his team defense, his off-ball defense, like, it's all at such a high level. Whereas Jalen Suggs, you know, at 6'5", and the physicality he brings at the point of attack, I think it's a little bit different. One of the, you know, the largest differences between these teams, even though both are exceptional defensively, is Orlando allows the third fewest wide open threes per game, while Boston allows the fifth most, right? Like, Boston allows you to take 20 shots a game over the course of the season with no defender within 6 feet. So I think from a Cavs perspective, they need to make sure that they are getting that three-point volume up, because three-point volume can be the great equalizer in those two games in Boston that, you know, Boston won both of those games, but the Cavs were able to hang around. Actually outshot them from three, right? Like, they were able to get up threes at a good volume there. So that's definitely going to be a key for this series. But you're right. Like, it was a physical series for Orlando. You know, game six, they come out there starting four guys, 6'10 and above. And Jalen Suggs at 6'5 at point guard. Like, it's just the weirdest, largest team. They're painful to play against. They're annoying to play against. I know they gave Boston some good games throughout the season as well, so you're familiar with that. But, you know, I think health definitely put the Cavs behind the eight ball to some extent in this series, where if they had their guys, if Mitchell and Garland were healthy, if Wade was available, if Allen was available, I don't think this series goes as long. But because it went seven, that means they're going to be playing every other day, at least through the first four games of the series. So, you know, they made it harder on themselves than it needed to be.
Yeah, and I think many Celtics fans expected a grind of a series with Orlando if that's where it was going to go.
Yeah.
But I said going in, they can't beat the Celtics. There's no path to the Magic beating the Celtics just because of the 3-point differential between those two teams. The Magic don't even set themselves up to win that. And they, you know, going into today, were shooting 30% in that series against Cleveland. So non-existent from beyond the arc. I just don't think enough creation on the ball. Franz Wagner's shooting just completely disappeared this year. So, I mean, that could have ended up being a sweep, maybe 5 games if the Celtics just fell asleep in one.
Yeah, I think Cavs, you would have felt maybe Kristaps being out for at least one game, but I would probably agree with that assessment.
I'm not saying the Cavs can win this series, but there's a path, right? Yeah. Maybe another Celtic goes down. Maybe they just catch absolute fire from this series. Like, you know, just imagining scenarios where it could happen. I don't think it's very likely. But the one big thing going in their favor that actually gives them a path, like you said, is winning that 3-point margin in all those games. And, you know, they drew pretty close to the Celtics in threes per game this year. You know, obviously the Celtics drew miles ahead of everybody in that, but 42 to 37, you know, first and eighth. There's bigger gaps than that, you know, across the league. Like the Cavs are kind of in that, you know, Nets, Hawks, Bucks area in terms of threes per game. And, you know, would they finish 37? So, you know, a little above average, and they caught fire in that last game. Wade in particular caught fire in that last game while the Celtics finished 0-for-8. So that can give you a game. That can give you two games. The Heat, who had much less left on their roster, went out and hit 23 threes by just focusing on getting that volume up. And obviously defensively, they can do a lot of other things here too that try to, you know, equalize the shot margin or whatever way that they're going to have to try to even this series. And the big thing too, and we've seen it in the past, especially last year where they took 3 out of 4 games against Boston. If you get to crunch time, which is going to be the tough part, Mitchell gives you a chance in that spot, but
yeah,
he didn't look like himself in this series. So that's going to be a challenge too.
Yeah. And no time off obviously hurts there as well. Right. And you would hope that, hey, if Mitchell's knee isn't right and he's not able to get that same pop, like maybe Garland can step up with a 3-point volume, but he's dealing with the back issue, so that it does make things a whole lot more difficult. I think Donovan's done a good job of kind of understanding his limitations with this injury and you know, playing downhill and kind of sussing out what he is and isn't able to get away with on the court. So that's something I've been very impressed with. But ultimately, when, you know, 3-point volume is going to be one of those kind of great equalizers, it does give you some pause and gives you some trepidation heading into the series. So it'll be interesting to see how that particular aspect goes. Another thing you mentioned to me earlier today, which I agree with, is Evan Mobley's had some of his worst games against Al Horford. And the thing about Mobley is he's able to hold his own defensively as a 5. But offensively, he really benefits from playing at the 4. And, you know, whether it's the 2-man game with Jared Allen, whether it's, you know, being able to finish over some smaller defenders at the power forward position relative to center, there's just a variety of reasons that kind of contribute to him not being as effective offensively at the 5. Now, you know, he still does get plenty of opportunities to do that in the regular season. As much as people focus on the 2-big thing for the Cavs, they ultimately play like 18 minutes together per game, and they play 30 with just one of them out there. So for everyone that acts like it's a 48-minute proposition, I think you're kind of listening to the national narratives a little too frequently when it comes to this team. But that's going to be a big test, man. Like they're going to need, especially if Jared Allen's out, they're going to need Evan Mobley to be that short roll hub. They're going to need him to be decisive. And Al Horford, you know, even though he is older, he is still capable of, you know, contributing at a high level. And Boston's got depth beyond him as well.
Yes, and looking at that depth, it's going to be important because I think the Cavs are going to be another team like the Heat that tries to bring extra pressure to Tatum, try to get him off the ball, make other guys beat them. And, you know, he shot 39% in this matchup during the year, but that flowed down to 49% for Brown. Hauser shot 7-for-10 from 3 in this matchup.
Would that be your like suggested strategy is, you know, bring 2 to the ball, show and recover, try to make Jason Tatum a playmaker? Because that was one of the things we just wrapped up our game 7 reaction pod with a little bit of a look ahead. And we were kind of wondering if the best course of action might just be to kind of play them straight up, whether, you know, obviously you'd hope that Wade would be available. If not, probably going to see Isaac Okoro and Marcus Morris get a little bit of that assignment. But like, just kind of staying home, understanding that Boston, with the volume of three-pointers that they take and how proficient they are at moving the ball and kind of recognizing when guys are open, if you're in a scramble mode, you're going to give up offensive rebounds. You're going to give up more open looks and whatnot. And, you know, without, you know, bringing the help, maybe that baits, you know, Tatum and Brown into some of their worst habits in terms of playing that one-on-one game and not, you know, killing the ball movement of the team overall. Where do you fall kind of on that discussion?
I think when you see what happened in Miami last series, you do start to think about that a little bit more, because they did play in the past,
right?
Passed, and other guys got going, especially Brown, who, you know, just continues, especially in one-on-one matchups, to devastate guys. I saw something, I wish I had the stats in front of me, but he was like one of the top 10 guys in like difficult shots or just like isolation scoring or something like that during the year. So Jaylen can be just as devastating if you are going to bring extra pressure against Tatum. And certainly right. White went off last series as well. And Holiday, you know, I don't know if there's still something lingering with his arm. He had like a dead arm late in the year and just wasn't super involved in that Miami series before this. But, you know, you look at his numbers from that Cleveland series during the year, 59% from the field, 43% from three. White shot 50% from three himself. So you give these other guys open shots off the pass or just in rotation, and they're going to take advantage of them. Horford's going to be the big one. Like, can you hedge off of Horford a little and hope that he misses? He's had some up and down games, you know, in the past into the postseason. In this series, during the regular season, I don't think he shot great. Of course, coming off the bench, and I think a lot of those games were earlier in the year when he was still getting used to that. But yeah, I think you can probably hope to hedge away from him a little bit more, obviously, than you would be able to against Porzingis. I don't think they're going to send him at as many mismatches as they would Porzingis certainly there. So I think that presents the opportunity to bring some extra attention to Tatum away from that spot. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what the Cavs are going to have to try to hope for, is that Horford won't make them pay in this series here. And, you know, in the first round, I felt like he was pretty solid. You know, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but the challenge in this series for him is that this is going to be an every other day series.
Yeah.
And there's no Celtics had, I think, like three games in a week to open that Heat series. This one's just going to be game off, game off, game off. And I think that's one of the more challenging spots for him to thrive in. And listen, they had a lot of rest leading up to the series. They didn't put nearly as much pressure on him during the year. But I do think if there's anything that works in Cleveland's favor in this series, certainly health against them, offenses against them, I think the Celtics are even the better defensive team out of these two. That Horford factor, Porzingis' absence, is where they're going to have to take advantage here.
Yeah, they're going to need to try to rely on rim pressure. And, you know, with Porzingis out, I think it's going to be very similar to the Orlando Magic, where a lot of the strength defensively is going to come at that point of attack. And the challenge is going to be getting downhill and getting to the rim, generating that rim pressure, because that's going to open up the three-pointers. And also, like, that's going to be the weaker part of a great defense, right? Without Porzingis being able to provide that rim protection, which he's been so phenomenal this year, like just a hell of a move by the Celtics. And honestly, I didn't expect it to pay off in the way that it has. And to me, this Celtics roster is the best team in the NBA. Like, I think this is absolutely the best team in the NBA. I think they're capable of even winning a championship if Porzingis was out for the remainder of the playoffs. So this is going to be a real test. And, you know, as much as I wish that this was a healthy matchup for both teams, and, you know, the stretch big effect of Kristaps Porzingis would test the Cavs defense, because I think that's one area where they've had issues in the past, I do still think that this is a good challenge for Cleveland. And in our season preview, like when we were trying to, you know, determine what our goals were for this season, we had a debate. We had a little back and forth. And I said that I would rather lose in six games in the second round to a top team like Boston or Milwaukee, because, you know, that was our perception at the time. I'd rather lose in six games in the second round in a hard-fought series than get swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. Because from a Cavs perspective, when you're trying to make an assessment of this core, I don't think you can get outclassed again. Like, I think you have to show that, yeah, we're not quite on this level, but we're able to hang. We're able to improve through, you know, internal growth. We have our mid-level exception. We have a first-round pick to play with this year. Like, we have avenues to improve this roster and internal avenues to growth. If you just get thoroughly outclassed, you know, assuming you're fully healthy and whatnot, if you get thoroughly outclassed, like, those questions become a whole lot harder. And then it starts to, you know, transfer to those kind of discussions about the core of this team.
And that's been the difficulty for them all year. And I don't want to make this too much of a big picture discussion here before the series even gets started. But
yeah,
you go through the series, let's say Allen doesn't play at all, and Garland and Mitchell are clearly limited. And obviously at that point, the Celtics would just roll through this series. Where do you find yourself? You know, at that point, the Mitchell decision, and I'm sure the pressure on him, you know, to make a move, I think at that point will be immense. I think it's going to be tough, you know, given how the last 2 years went here, to believe in this thing improving here, even though you can say injuries and absences and everything else. And, you know, I think short of Memphis, this is probably the team or third team, you know, most devastated by injuries throughout the season. I mean, they just didn't get 60 games from anybody here other than Allen, who's now down, of course.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, I think like anyone with a sensible mind will look at this team and say, you just didn't get a good picture of them this year. But that's not always how it works. You know, like any team, I think, can come out of a year and say like, oh, if this went one way or that went another way. But, you know, guys will move on. Moves sometimes get made.
Sometimes you got to make assessments and decisions on incomplete data sets. Like, that's the unfortunate thing. And, you know, I still feel confident that Donovan Mitchell is going to be back. Like, he strikes me in all of his actions and everything he said as somebody that is very invested in this situation. And like, even in this game, like, I'm so impressed by his leadership, where, you know, he's comforting Garland and
he's still like, locked in.
He's understanding that in order for this team to achieve their ultimate goals, he's going to need everybody else. It's not a, you know, we saw this, you know, in playoff runs where LeBron was on the way out, where, all right, I'm just going to do it all myself, right? And it's almost a little bit of martyr ball. That's not what's happening here. Like, when Garland in the fourth quarter missed a three, Coro gets the offensive rebound, kicks it out to Mitchell. Mitchell goes right back to Garland, and he hits a contested three in the corner instead. And, you know, they're hugging. He understands that, hey, I need Garland to get going, right? Like, Mitchell's had the best seasons of his career playing off ball alongside Darius Garland. Their minutes together have been so good, and this has just been such a damn weird season where – you talk about like the games missed, forget the games missed. Like, they've had the issues in the few games that they've had together from a health perspective. Like, both of them came in with hamstring injuries. Garland had a shooting hand injury that impacted him for about a month, as well as a neck issue. And then, you know, the broken jaw, loses 16 pounds of muscle as a result of not being able to eat solids for 6 weeks. Right. And then, all right, I've lost all that weight. I'm trying to, you know, regain confidence, regain stamina, because he wasn't allowed to exercise at all in that month and a half. And like, you see at the start of the year, how long it takes guys from going from off season mode, where they're training every single day and training camp. Like, they have that ramp up, and it still takes them a while to get into game shape and to find their rhythm as a team. To go to a cold, dead stop in like late January, where you're not exercising at all for a month and a half and you're not allowed to eat solids and whatnot, like, that is such a tough transition. And you layer on, you know, the death in the family that he's had, the ankle injuries, the back now. Like, it's just been a season from hell. So, you know, it's frustrating. It's made it probably the most difficult season from an evaluation standpoint that I've had to cover. But, you know, I do find that Donovan Mitchell's leadership and the way that he's been invested in this group has been really impressive. And, you know, it might be one of those situations where you get, you know, an extension like we've seen with Stars and evaluate in 2 years, because, you know, the trade market isn't necessarily there. Like, Miami depleted their picks. They only have one to offer. New York Knicks made a lot of their kind of cash-ins in terms of players. They just kind of have a bunch of low-value firsts and whatnot. Like, you know, I don't know if there's a better situation for him than sticking this out, but, you know, you never know. You never know what coming up short in the playoffs can do for a team in terms of changes.
Yeah, strangely enough, I think one of the teams that could use him most probably would be Orlando. But I don't know how aggressive they're going to get.
I don't think I'd see that coming.
I got one more Cavs thing for you. We'll pivot to the Celtics a little bit in the second half here. JB, obviously, this was a big series for him. He had to get through this. He probably doesn't survive a first-round loss to Orlando. Where do you stand on him, the job he's done this year, the coaching matchup in general in this series? Because obviously, you know, he's gotten some scrutiny, and Joe has certainly gotten as much scrutiny as anyone over these last 2 years coming into this matchup here. But I thought he did a solid job in the first round. Went up well against Eric Spoelstra in the 4-1 series win there. And I think himself has shown a lot of growth this year in many different ways in terms of how he's utilized this team and made them, again, you know, a top three unit on both ends of the floor. So how do you view this coaching matchup factoring into the series?
I'm probably the worst person to have on for this because I've always been just a coward when it comes to talking about coaches, because I just don't know like where to kind of make the assessments, right? Like I understand, you know, rotations and schemes, but so often like it comes down to execution.
The biggest JB, just from afar, criticism I've seen is not putting enough shooting on the floor.
Right. And, you know, so much of that always comes down to the two big conversation. And, you know, it's frustrating that, you know, lineup data never really gets factored into it. Like last year, they were dramatically better offensively with both bigs on the court compared to Mobley at center as well as Jared Allen at center. This year, I think the offensive struggles in those two big lineups and that starting lineup in particular has really been the result of poor guard play, right? Like it's been Garland struggling. It's been Mitchell struggling after the All-Star break. Like they need both of those guys, like in order for the offense to work. Two bigs doesn't work unless both Garland and Mitchell are rolling offensively. Like it just doesn't. They can even get away. Like last year, they had Isaac Okoro starting at the three, and they had a 122 offensive rating as a starting unit. And that was because of Garland and Mitchell's kind of offensive excellence. That hasn't been there as consistently this year. But I thought for the most part, JB did a pretty good job in the series. In general, I tend to, you know, ascribe to the Ty Lue philosophy of don't make the adjustments too early in the series. Like, let's kind of feel this thing out for the first 2-3 games to see what comes down to execution and what requires adjustments and changes. Because, you know, some of the struggles that the Cavs had in this series, it came down to execution. Like it came down to, you know, the second half of games four, when they were up 9, like they took themselves out of what they were doing well offensively. It wasn't necessarily anything Orlando was doing. They just rushed the process offensively. They were pressing. They were taking shots too soon and whatnot. So I think JB's done a good job navigating the injuries of this series. But, you know, there's always going to be those questions from an offensive scheme standpoint of there is creativity to generate the good looks with the personnel that they have. But is there another tier here? And, you know, I think these are the type of questions that you want to have answered in the playoffs. And you really don't learn about kind of the coaching and those type of changes until you're in the playoff setting. So I think just like we evaluate the roster itself through over 82 games and in the playoffs, the same thing is going to be said for the coaching staff.
We, of course, going into the second round, are brought to you by great sponsors like Prize Picks. Check out Prize Picks right now. Get 100% deposit match up to $100 over there. It's our official daily fantasy sports partner here at CLNS Media and the Garden Report. Second round about to get underway, already underway with Minnesota and Denver. So every night you're going to get great stat projections here that you can pick more or less on. Two players, got your team, you're good to go. And, you know, whether it's points, assists, you can do different players from different sports, you know, different combinations of stats here. There's a lot of fun ways to use Prize Picks during the second round of the playoffs. And I think over the next week here, we're going to have Celtics and Bruins every day for the next week here. So they're on the Florida Celtics, about to take on the Cavaliers. Enjoy it all with Prize Picks, our official daily fantasy sports partner. Again, get 100% deposit match up to $100 with our code CLNS. Just goes to prizepicks.com/CLNS to get that offer. Again, use that code CLNS to support us here at the Garden Report and CLNS Media, and our new great sponsor here, who I've used even before we partnered with them. Love this app, Game Time. Tickets right up until and even after tip-off. If you want to get in the game one on Tuesday, this is the app to go to. And if it's your first time, you're going to get $20 off your first purchase. course, terms apply, and you got to use that code CLNS for them as well. Just download that Game Time app, create an account, use the code CLNS, and you're going to get $20 off your first purchase. Of course, again, terms apply. Go to the Game Time app today and check that out. Again, I think Game 5 tickets last week, $103 on the Game Time app, which is probably cheap.
Yeah.
Probably cheaper than some of the regular season games. So again, check it out. You're in the Garden area. First quarter's going on. It's great. They'll still be selling tickets on there. So go check that out. I'm excited to see Cleveland, Justin, for the first time. I've never been to.
Oh, man.
There what is go. It? Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse?
Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Romo Fijo, baby.
Yes. Good atmosphere, I assume.
Great, great atmosphere. Great arena. It's a beautiful. They did a great job with the renovations and whatnot. A lot of great food in the area too. Awesome people. I think you're going to have a good time, man.
Yeah, I was kind of rooting for it just because I've been to Orlando a handful of times. Used to go there all the time growing up. So I know that area pretty well. Never been to Cleveland though. And there's been some good games between these two teams. And I've, you know, just from even back to those LeBron years, great crowd down in there, it looks like. So looking forward to that. Just booked it today. Saturday, game 3, Monday, game 4. I hear you'll be there as well.
Possibly. We'll see. We're still got to figure out travel, you know, coming down from Canada. It's sometimes these playoff situations are a little last minute, but I'm definitely hoping to be down there. That would be a lot of fun. Be fun to hang out. I'll give you some restaurant recommendations one way or another. But yeah, downtown Cleveland's a lot of fun, man. Like, good people, a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. And food is great. Definitely one of Cleveland's stronger suits for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot. So from a Celtics perspective here, I'm looking at some of the margins here, see if there's any area that really stands out. And it's honestly pretty close. I feel like all these games are going to be tight and competitive. I don't feel like, you know, unless the Celtics go on one of those absolute heaters from three like they did in game one of the first round, mm-hmm. I don't think there's going to be many runaways in this series. The turnover rate, that's where it could get a little tricky. The Celtics win that 12-13.8. So the Cavs are going to have to tighten that up a little bit. Celtics are the best team in the league from a turnover perspective in terms of limiting them. The offensive rebounding points in Boston's direction a little bit too, but it's 28-7 to 27-4 there. So not a huge difference. Free throws, Cavs shot like 0.2 more per game. And the shot margin, especially from three, is where it's going to get tricky for Cleveland here too. But again, not any massive differences there. The one thing, I just feel like Cleveland plays sound basketball on both ends of the floor. Like, they're not going to be doing anything ridiculous offensively or going on massive droughts like the Magic might have that are going to completely take them out of a game. The defense is obviously pretty fundamentally solid. There's a lot of size inside too there. They're going to need Allen, I think, on both ends of the floor to make this thing work. But from a Celtics perspective, if Porzingis is in there, you're looking at a series where the Cavs are going to have a really tough time keeping up with just the firepower they have. And I know they played well in game 5 without him. The pace looked good. Horford's ready to step in here. And his, you know, stats were pretty solid in that first round that I got him up here. 59% from the field, 40% from three, 7 rebounds a game for him too in that first round series. So he's ready. Not as much of a beating on him this regular season. Great decision maker out there.
Yeah.
I think they got enough here to edge out the Cavs in some close games. What I'm interested to see, like I mentioned earlier,
this Cavs team you're describing sounds awesome. I wish that was the case, man. Like, honestly, there have been a few too many offensive droughts for them. Like, they've had some 15-point quarters against the Magic and
hoping this game was brutal today. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, finding consistency has been their biggest issue since the All-Star break. And you know, there's a variety of factors for that and lack of continuity of who's in the lineup. Like, I think there's going to be at least one Boston blowout game, and it's going to be on the Cavs to keep their composure, to not let that rattle them.
I bet it'll be game one.
Two would be my guess if I had to guess one, just because, you know, the rest versus rust thing where Boston hasn't played for a little while. Whereas the Cavs are coming off the intensity of, you know, game 7 and some close games here. But yeah, like I can definitely see it happening in game 1. Wouldn't surprise me. It could happen game 1 and 2, right? Like, this Boston's as I said, the best team in the league, in my opinion, and this is going to be a real challenge, but the Cavs are going to need to value possessions, like you said, fix that those turnover issues and you know, be a little bit more decisive with what they're doing and, you know, try to win that possession battle, try to win all those kind of little variance things that can even the playing field, because, you know, we tend to act like we tend to take the result and work backwards when it comes to the NBA and say, you know, the best team won, but that's not always the case. If the best team won, Boston would have a championship by now in, you know, recent memory. Like, I think they were a better team than the Warriors. I think they were a better team than Miami last year. You're going to try to win the possession battle and keep yourself in position that some of those bad habits come out. But it's not like the Cavs, we're talking about some super disciplined team that never makes those same mistakes and don't take themselves out of games. Like, they do that. They absolutely do that. And that's why I think this is such an interesting test. And it's such an interesting measuring stick series, because you want to know how close you are to the best. You want to know how you can kind of rise to the occasion. And if you're dealing with, you know, physical ailments, doing what Donovan Mitchell has done, which is, you know, kind of understanding, all right, I'm not really able to dunk right now. I'm not able to explode and finish at the rim like I normally do. So, you know, those little sidestep floaters and whatnot that he's doing, and just the crafty moves to finish and get downhill. Like, Cavs are going to need to do that. They're going to need to understand their limitations and play within that.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more of a fully loaded Cavs team. And I'm always willing to give, you know, the competition going into a series good level of respect. And I did that for the Heat. But similar situation here. This almost feels, in some ways, like the same series coming into it, where there's just so much missing on the other side. Obviously, Butler being out of Miami would be like Mitchell being out for Cleveland here. Like, there's another level to that loss on the Miami side. But I think, you know, winning that series in five games like the Celtics did matters to some degree, too, because still some of those guys on that side that have given you trouble. You suffer a bad loss in game two, so you have to come back from that.
Yep.
There's all that Heat stuff going on, like the Caleb Martin hit that you have to deal with, Bam's, you know, flagrant foul in game five. And I think the Celtics responded pretty well to all of that. And then, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, just the way the Heat guarded Tatum. He had a pretty rough series, 41% from the field, 29 from three, you know, missed some free throws here or there, but he got up, grabbed 10 boards a game, 5.4 assists per game, limited his turnovers to 1.8. And I think the biggest area of growth, both he and Brown showed in that series, the Heat zoned it up. The Heat threw 2-3 bodies at them sometimes. And I think as recently as last year, they would try to solve that by just going head on and trying to shoot their way out of those struggles, or, you know, try to just beat 2-3 guys into the paint, or, you know, just handle things on their own. And they trusted the pass, trusted their teammates through that series, let other guys handle the scoring in different spots. And it wasn't the cleanest offensive series for the Celtics. Mm-hmm. And certainly you have to consider the competition they went against, because especially by game five, the Heat just had nothing left.
Yeah.
But I think you can take a little something from that win for them. How much?
Dude, absolutely.
I don't know.
I think Boston's been trending in the right direction. And, you know, there's a lot of scrutiny. And, you know, how I talked about, you know, people don't really look at the lineup data when they talk about, you know, the Cavs and the two bigs for, like, even in this series, like, their net rating was dramatically better with both Allen and Mobley on the court than it was with just single bigs. But you'll see people say, oh, you know, they won these last two games in Cleveland because they went to one big. No, they won games one and two by 20 points. The hell are you talking about, right? Like, the same thing happens with Boston, where you'll hear about their struggles in the fourth quarter. You'll hear about their struggles in the clutch. And then you look up at the data and, oh, they have the number one net rating in the fourth quarter. Oh, they have the fifth best clutch net rating, right? Like, you remember the five losses or the five times that didn't go well, that the process was bad, over the 25 successes, right? Like, that's just human nature. That's nature as fan. And, like, I appreciate kind of the love and respect you're giving the Cavs in this matchup here, but, like, you should feel good about yourself. You should feel good about this Celtics team. This is a really, really, really goddamn good team that is playing great basketball. And we tend to talk about, you know, the value of taking care of business in the regular season. Like, you know, when you play three games in four nights and, you know, the second game before the back-to-back is against like Detroit or something, sometimes you can play down to your competition and you have to play your starters 36 minutes. And as a result of that, that third game all of a sudden becomes almost like an auto loss, or it becomes a schedule loss. The Celtics did themselves a favor by not screwing around with the Heat. They got it done in five games. And as a result of that, they get to rest. They get to work on what their offense and defense is going to look like without Kristaps Porzingis. The Cavs, on the other end, screwed around a little bit. And as a result of that, they're going to be at, you know, that rest deficit, which, you know, given the gap in terms of talent and how good these teams were in the regular season, puts them in an even tougher position.
Yeah, absolutely. So how are these teams going to match up here? Let's just assume to start the series, no Allen, Mobley's at center. I assume they'll probably keep Okoro in the starting lineup just based on how that went today. And they're going to need, you know, a big wing against the Jays out there anyway.
Yeah.
So probably Mobley on Horford, Okoro on Tatum.
I'd put Okoro on Tatum. Yeah. You know, Paolo in game five hit a ton of shots, but Okoro made him work. Like he did a great job on him. And you know, he had 36 in this game, but he shot 35% from the floor, right? Like, there's going to be a height gap. Tatum's what, 6'8"? 6'9"?
Yeah.
So, Coral's 6'5", 6'6". But, you know, his understanding of how to impact a shot and play defense before the shot even goes up has improved. Like, I think he's honestly one of the best on-ball defenders in the league. He's such a valuable part for this team, and it's just about, you know, can the offense stay consistent enough to justify him being out on the court, right? Like, there's a couple times in the fourth quarter of game six where he passed up open threes when it swung out to him. Just can't do that, man. You just can't do that. We can't have those kind of record scratches for a guy that, you know, upped his three-point volume this season, taking three a game, shooting 39%, right? Like, you have to take those open shots, because if you're passing up a good shot in the playoffs, you're probably not getting another one within that half court possession unless you're getting an offensive rebound. So, you know, Okoro is going to need to play that defense before Tatum goes up on the shot, rather than, you know, just kind of relying on the contest. The comparison I draw is, you know, to Tony Allen, who was giving up 7 inches to Kevin Durant, but was one of the best Kevin Durant defenders because, hey, I got on your hip when you were getting ready to pivot to take that over your right shoulder shot, right? Or disrupting the dribble, disrupting the rhythm beforehand. Like, that's what they're going to need to from him individually in order to bother Tatum in this series. But ideally, you would love to have Dean Wade. Dean Wade's done such a good job on Tatum in the past, over the last couple of years, and just being able to throw that length at him, I think, would be valuable.
Yeah, and then, you know, you can have Okoro into the second units if Brown's out there. And it's been right. More Tatum-y in those second units, but they would definitely help to have all those different options out there, because Strus, I think, competes out there defensively. It'd be tough for him against Jaylen, though, with the level Jaylen's reached this year. And, you know, what we really have to talk about here are those guards, because I think one of the toughest areas for Cleveland in this series will be the level at which the consistency at which the Celtics attack mismatches. And they're going to make Mitchell work. They're going to make Garland especially work. And yeah, I think they're going to consistently go at Garland here in this series. And I don't know, you probably try to put him on Holiday just because Holiday hasn't been as active in terms of getting shots up. I don't think he had the best first round. I don't know if there's still any lingering effects to the dead arm he was dealing with late in the year, as I mentioned earlier. He finished that first round 35% from the field, 36.8% from three. So that's probably where you try to hide Garland a little bit. Holiday will back those guys down and try to post up. But that hasn't been a big part of his game or even their offense over the last couple months here. So
yeah,
I think you try to get away with that.
Yeah, and I always love those situations, right? Like, you know, it always cracks me up. Teams used to do this with Kevin Love where they're like, oh, Kevin Love's the weak defender, so let's, you know, post him up and try to beat him that way. No, that's not how you do it, right? Like, you get guys in actions. You attack them in space. And, you know, for the season, people always talk about, you know, the defense with Garland and Mitchell, but they have a 109 defensive rating with both of them on the court. And, like, that would be the second best mark in the NBA. And it doesn't drop off a ton when there's only one big. Like, it's not just Mobley and Allen. And one of the biggest parts of that this year has been Donovan Mitchell locking in defensively. And Now, again, one of the things that's really impressed me about Donovan Mitchell is just the level of buy-in, right? Like, this is a guy that is now really dedicating himself to being a two-way player in Cleveland. The playmaking has been the best that it's been, you know, in his career. This is a guy that's out there in the community. He's going to high school basketball games and whatnot. Like, Donovan Mitchell has been completely locked in throughout this tenure in Cleveland, and despite a lot of noise from the outside. So we're going to need him to, you know, play that solid defense. We're going to need Garland to play the good positional defense that he is capable of playing rather than falling asleep. And you definitely saw that today. But like I said, I think you're going to need to stay home against Boston, because if you get in the scramble and you start like blitzing guys, like
it's Derek White time.
Dog, you're an extra pass away from like getting absolutely shelled. And Boston is more than capable of, you know, making those type of plays. So I think I would expect Donovan Mitchell on Derek White and Garland on Drew. But I could also see that changing up where they put Garland on White and Mitchell on Drew, just because of, you know, not that either of them aren't strong, but Drew is probably of the two a little bit bulkier.
Yeah, and I think if you're sending help from anywhere, like I said, it's probably Mobley off of Horford there, and you try to get away with that a little bit. It's going to be difficult to give up shots in rotation of White and Holiday, who hits his threes, especially in the corner. And White was just devastating last series. I mean, he's at a level of confidence right now and shot making and just...
I worry about him more than Drew.
Absolutely. I think you worry about him in some ways more than Jaylen right now. Like,
as a connector, and like, you know, I think when
just Derek making White, the right decision every yeah, time
when Derek White's playing his best, I think that has more of a, like a tide that raises all boats effect than Jaylen Brown. Although obviously what Brown can do, I'm not trying to minimize that. I'm not trying to minimize anyone on this team. This team's awesome. But I do think that Derek White has more of that impact. And, you know, when it comes to Drew Holiday, as you mentioned, he may be dealing with some ailments there and whatnot, but it's also been a long time since we've seen him have an effective offensive playoffs. Like, even when they won the title in Milwaukee, it was rough. He was rough in that finals. He was rough the whole playoff run. And, you know, that's not something that typically turns around as you get older. So, you know, I'm definitely just jinxed it. He's going to go absolutely nuts against the Cavs. I'm knocking on wood. It's already too late. It is what it is. But I think, you know, dedicating resources, and if, you know, whichever guard you feel more confident in defensively, I'd probably put it on Derek White.
22.4 points per game on 57.7 shooting for White in the first round. He shot 48 from three on almost 9 attempts, 3 assists to 1 turnover. The guy is perfect, and he is just skyrocketed. Obviously, he had the game 6 shot last year. I thought he gave a boost to that finals team, even though his play kind of deteriorated as that postseason went on. And now, as a starter every game this year, and the involvement and the confidence he's playing with, I mean, he dunked 3 times, I think, in the between games 4 and 5. He threw down a running dunk at the start of game 5 that pretty much ended that game. And the way he's just getting shots off, I mean, he'll fall too much into, and we'll talk about this with a lot of role guys, trying to defer, trying to set other guys up too much, maybe passing up shots. Just trying to be more of a complimentary guy than an aggressive guy. And The Celtics have said it over and over again. When he's aggressive, they're just on another level, because he can score 20, 30 points when he's getting his own shot off. And he's hit some step back shots. He's stepped into threes. Like, he can just score in so many ways. He'll get downhill and just kind of rumble between a bunch of bodies. And I think that's going to be important when you have those big rim protectors out there, him just kind of going into that space, drawing contact, hitting some man ones in the lane. And then you talk about the defense, which is probably going to be critical to Boston trying to separate themselves in this series. Whether he's on Garland, I'd probably put him on Garland just because of the speed factor there. I think he's better with some of the quicker guards than Holiday is. So he's been blocking 2-3 shots a game, playing sound defense, aggressive defense. The guy is just perfect. I mean, if we're stacking up like the moves across the NBA that changed the league over the last 3 to 5 years, he's got to be in the top 5 to 10, because everything changed the day he got here, and it's just gotten better and better and better since. now everybody's panicking in Boston after the extended holiday. It's like, they're going to figure out how to keep White here. Because honestly, just like I was saying, in terms of you worry about White more than Brown, I think White into the future is more consequential to keeping this team at the highest winning level than Brown is, as great and as important as Brown is too. And now all of a sudden you're in a position where everybody's locked up long term except him. So I think that's a little bit of a source of panic right now. But all that matters today is that he's playing some of the best basketball he ever has. And I think he's crucial for
this series. Stephen A stuff. This is some Stephen A stuff. You're talking about offseason and like moves down the road when we've got a playoff series ahead of us, man. Like Boston's got a great chance to win a championship. Don't stress about that stuff now. You know, that's like credit card bills. You don't have to think about that ever, man. You just keep pushing that out. You push it down the road, push it down the road, pay it off with another credit card, and you're rolling.
I've said this, Justin. Derek White, I think Horford's my favorite Celtic I've watched over the years. White's probably up to like three.
He's been massive. And, you know, obviously there's the sliding doors moment of Cleveland was going after him at that deadline as well. You know, I don't think they would have had the resources to go get Donovan Mitchell after if they had landed him. But, you know, that's he's definitely been someone that's changed the Celtic franchise in his time there.
I wonder what they would have given up, because you look back. And we debated about the price at the time. Josh Richardson.
The reporting was that they want. Yeah, the reporting was they wanted Sexton and a pick, I believe, which felt a little steep at the time, especially with, you know, Colin coming off a 23-5 season on high efficiency and so much unknown kind of being there with the Derek White contract. But, you know, he's been a hell of a player for them. He's been really, really damn good.
Yeah, it seemed aggressive at the time. Two firsts. Obviously, the second a pick swap in 28. Richardson, who people really liked in Boston the first half that year, and Langford, who, you know, some people had hope for at that time as well.
Yeah.
But Stevens identified him, said he could be that last piece, that point guard they needed. And even though he's more of a combo guard in San Antonio, it worked out perfectly here. It's just been a dream what he's been able to do for this team here. And he's great to watch. He's one of the, you know, more exciting components of this team. Night in and night out. So I guess the only thing we have left to talk about here with this series are the benches. Mixed results for Boston in that first round series. Pritchard had that great game one, but he finished 33 from the field. Cornett was hurt for most of the first half and really wasn't needed up until the Porzingis injury. And then he came in and played a great game five. He held Bam the, I think, 5 of 14 in the series as a whole. Great drop defender, and I think you can play drop against Cleveland given some of the shooting stuff we've talked about here.
Absolutely. I played drop. You know, that's kind of one of the biggest tensions is, you know, especially with Garland being a pass first player, like they're on him. They are on him to be shoot first. You know, you're until he starts beating you and actually taking those pull-ups, play drop.
Like, and so I saw that on Twitter today as I was scrolling through. The Cavs don't step into a ton of those mid-range floaters, mid-range pull-ups, as much as I thought they would have.
It's one of the areas that they got to improve, man. Like, you know, as much as the Cavs in, you know, those four finals runs, a lot of three-point volume, a lot of attacking the rim, they recognize when those shooting pockets opened up in the mid-range, right? Like those 18-footers, there was so often that like Kyrie would get ran off the three-point line. And just that 18 footer is there. So I'm going to pull up. I'm going to take it. I'm going to make it at a high clip. Jalen Brunson does a great job with that. I think that's one of those areas of for improvement that I would really like to see from Garland. One, he's got to kill you every time that you go and drop. He needs to be more aggressive in taking those shots rather than, I think, in his head. And he's actually talked about this. Like he's talked about like the points per possession on his 3-point shots. He's shooting at 40% versus the lobs that he throws to Mobley and Allen in the lane. And I think he just like, he's doing the math of, you know, good shot versus great shot at the rim. And he's just got to be more aggressive. He's got to recognize, you know, taking those shots against drop, taking those mid-range pull-ups when the defense is giving you that shooting pocket. Like that to me is kind of the next step in growth for him, because, you know, this isn't quite the Warriors 2 timeline thing, but you do have one player in his prime. Donovan Mitchell is 27, 28 years old. That's when players start hitting their prime. You've seen last 2 years have been the best of his career. And you've got Garland, who just turned 24. You got Mobley, who's still 22 years old. You got Isaac Okoro, who just turned 23, right? Like, he's the same age as Mobley. Like, You've got guys that are still trying to figure things out and still probably 2-3 years away from your prime. And that's always kind of been one of the tensions, right? From a team building standpoint.
So what are we talking about here with the Cavs bench as it stands?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, LeVert, obviously.
He was really good in that second game, I think, against Boston. He had like 21 or 26 or something like that.
Yeah, and, you know, he really struggled against Orlando, obviously dealing with a knee injury that's impacted his...
Everybody on this team's hurt.
It's been the story of the year, man. It's been such a brutal year. Like, even me as a podcaster got hurt. I tore my damn Achilles, right? Like, none of us made it through this damn series. But, you know, he played a whole lot better today in Game 7, gave them what they needed. George Niang, maybe, you know, they go to him at some point, but, you know, he got played off the floor when Orlando started playing with pace. So that's going to be interesting. Marcus Morris, I think Tristan Thompson's going to have to play. But I think, you know, you feel better about the Cavs' ability to go to the bench if the starters were all healthy, right? Like, if Jaren Allen's out there and Dean Wade's healthy, then it's like, okay, then you're going
a little bit more.
And then you're going to LeVert, you're going to Okoro, you're going to Wade. You can go to Niang or Morris, depending on what you need from that backup four, if Wade's not working out, right? And then you can go to Tristan. Like, that, all of a sudden you're naming off like 5-6 names that are potential options. Sam Merrill might get a look. But, you know, if Wade's out and Allen's out and Okoro has to start, who you have coming off the bench gets a whole lot thinner.
No, and I think you believe in that Boston bench and some of the stuff they've done. Hauser was fantastic last series. And
yeah,
like I said, 7-10 in this matchup this year. He's had some big performances against Cleveland as well. This one to me, though, and just assuming it's going to be shaky health for the Cavs on that side and guys are going to miss some games, I think I lean Celtics in 5. Yeah. As I look at it right now,
that would be the safest bet.
I think I could see some competitive games, you know, 3-4 competitive games across those. And I think it'll be a fun series, but it's just, there's not enough right there on that side healthy that you can count on right now. So it's just tough for me to sit here and say it's going to be this long competitive series as it stands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, I think Boston in 5 is probably the safest bet. I'm going to be a homer and say Boston in 6. That's what I picked on our podcast here. I think if the Cavs, especially with, you know, where they're at from a health standpoint, if the Cavs can take this series to 6, I think that that's something that they can.
If Wade and Allen are there, I think they can.
But, like, even if they're not, or they only play part of the series, if they're able to extend this to 6 games, I think that's something you legitimately can feel good about. Because, you know, the fact that they were able to get home court with as many injuries as they have had, and, you know, navigating the ups and downs of this season, like, it's been a lot. It's been a really damn tiring, long, exhausting year. And, you know, one of the impacts of playing shorthanded, too, is, like, takes a lot out of the guys that are playing, right? Like, I think part of why you're seeing so many issues and injuries is every single person that was stepping up with Garland and Mobley out has had some sort of fatigue issue that's kind of sidelined their season. Like, Max Strus had to sit for a month. Dean Wade was starting. His knee acted up, and he's been sitting since the All-Star break. Donovan Mitchell's knee acted up as a result of, you know, that 15-game stretch without Garland and Mobley. Like, Caris LeVert had to play more, and he's had these issues, right? Like, when you're playing that shorthanded and you're down a bunch of bodies and guys that aren't normally used to playing that many minutes have to play a lot of minutes, it just puts a big, big strain and kind of, you know, for everyone that feels like, you know, dump the talent and go to that style of play when, you know, they beat up on a bunch of losing teams. It definitely wasn't sustainable. It never was. And, you know, I like to continue to point out that when Garland and Mobley came back for that 10-game stretch prior to the All-Star break, the offense got better, the three-point volume remained, their net rating got better, and they actually got some quality wins. They beat the Kings, they beat the Clippers, rather than that 9-3 stretch with Mitchell and Allen, where the only winning team that they beat was the Bucks, and the Bucks have been a below 500 team since they fired Adrian Griffin. Like, and that was right after that firing, too. So, you know, it's been a weird season, but I think if the Cavs can extend this to 6, I think you can call it a successful season.
For sure. And I think the last thing I got to say about them is you just want to see something from Mobley here. This is such a crucial series, I think, for him. No Allen, maybe, you know, coming off of round one where he's pretty involved and, didn't shoot great in that series. He finished 48, probably want to be a little higher than that, 27 from three. And of course he's pretty limited from there, 66 at the line.
Yeah.
Great defender.
And of course he busted his ankle in game six. I forgot there was one more injury we hadn't discussed, but yeah, like it's
great defender, all world defender.
Yeah.
He's going to impact the series in that sense, but at some point, if you're going to become one of the best players in the league and a foundational piece on this team, the offense has to come around. I know he only played one game against the Celtics this year, but it was one of those nights where it's just like a struggle against Horford and he's 2 for 8. He can't get his own shot off. And it's going to be more imperative that he does that here if Allen's out, because Allen's so crucial to the offense. If he just has a dud of a series here, and that's a big reason they go down fast, it's another question you have with this team long term. I know he's still young, but he's been around for a little bit now.
Yeah, I mean, he's 22. Big
he's men young. Don't. He's young, but it's a couple seasons in now.
Big men don't come into their prime until 26. Like, it would be a question. I agree that it's a question. I'm not dismissing that as a notion, but I don't think that's something you act on, right? Like, I don't think there's a move where you're moving Evan Mobley and you're getting kind of that number one guy, that the difference maker. Like, your highest path to upside is banking on that internal growth. And then I think the questions would actually be, okay, what can we do to empower him? What can we do to kind of promote that offensive growth? Because the only times you see teams with, a backcourt like the Cavs, where you got a 6'1 point guard and a 6'3 shooting guard, the only time you see teams like that win is if there's a front court playmaker, if there's somebody that they can play off of. Because what defenses can do to those shorter players in the playoffs, it just makes it impossible to win when you're like a Dame and CJ and you're just kind of relying on 3-and-D guys around you. You need to have that offensive hub, that front court outlet that you can throw it to alleviate some pressure and hit those 15 footers and, provide some of that offensive spark. Toronto Raptors won with Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry both underneath 6 feet because they had that in Kawhi Leonard. They had that in Marc Gasol as that kind of post hub that they were able to play through. And, the Cavs are obviously trying to always add playmaking at those front court positions. I think what Max Strus has done as a connector and having, the best season of his career defensively and as a playmaker.
I love that the Celtics are going from the Heat trying to get over that thing to Max Strus, an extension of that.
Hey man, hopefully, some muscle memory there from last year kicks in and Max has a great series, but his playmaking has definitely been helpful. And Jared Allen took us such a
How is Lamar Stevens on this series? Come on.
It's amazing. It could have been the revenge series, but we're not getting that. But yeah, that's ultimately Mobley's offensive growth is going to determine what the Cavs ceiling is. And there's always going to be questions as a result.
We've
of
talked
that.
About it for years.
Since he's been drafted by the Cavs, and that's going to be the biggest thing, is taking some steps forward, shooting a good percentage from three this year on low volume, but particularly after he came back from the knee surgery. Yeah, I was trying to remember which injury that was. He shot really well from three from there, but I think the biggest thing for him is just going to be adding strength, like even to be able to, repeat that shooting motion at a consistent form and be able to have the legs later in games and to be able to beat up on some guys down low. Like, he's going to need to add some functional strength, and that's the biggest thing.
He missed, of course, those first two games in Boston. Celtics won the first one 120-113 with their full lineup intact there. Game two was 116-107, so two pretty close games there. Of course, no Mobley. I think everybody else was in there for the Cavs for the most part outside.
Outside of Garland not playing the second half with the broken jaw.
Outside of the collision there late in that game. And then, of course, the weird one, March 5th.
the Travis Kelce game.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. I was not expecting that. I was actually live or like doing one of those kind of live playback things or whatever during that game. And, they were honoring the Kelce brothers as Clevelanders and Dean Wade, being from Kansas, being the biggest Chiefs fan in the world. Like,
no Mitchell in that game either. Sam Merrill started.
Yeah, no Mitchell in that game. Again, we never seem to have fully healthy matchups between these teams, and I wish we did. But I think, even fully healthy, Boston would be the better team. And It's just going to come down to, can the Cavs bait them into their worst habits and capitalize on mistakes?
I think they're capable of doing it. I think they're going to need a little bit better health than they have right now. I think they're going to need a little bit more offensive consistency, especially from Mitchell, who didn't have a phenomenal series in the first round here. So right now it's looking uphill for them to compete here, but they've done it. You know, last year they were phenomenal against the Celtics in that season. Some differences on both ends account for that, I think. But there were still some pretty competitive games this year. And, of course, the comeback the last time we saw it here. So I'm looking forward to this. I think there could be 2 to 3, maybe even 4 good games in this series. And hopefully we'll get to link up in person for the first time, Justin.
Oh, man, it would be great. It would be absolutely great, man.
2018, I think.
Well, been doing the pod since 2017, the playoffs. This is going to be, you know, another.
Yeah, we probably used to talk back in the Isaiah
years. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure we did some content back then as well. And, you know, it's it'd be a full circle moment for sure. And, you know, this is the first time that we've had a playoff series between these teams where the Cavs don't have the best player in the series. That's going to be an interesting dynamic. It's, you know, this whole playoff experience has been weird for me because, you know, how old am I? Carry the one, 33 years old. Like my entire life, it's been anytime the Cats are in the playoffs, they have the best player on the planet. Like it's been a new and weird experience. And this is the first, you know, game seven since 2018. I wasn't even married yet at that point. Like it's been a wild, wild ride.
For me, that was, I think, the last gut-wrenching moment as a Celtics fan, blowing that game seven that year with Tatum as a rookie. And
I cannot believe we won that damn game. We should have lost in the first round in Indiana. That series went down to the seven games.
Like, and the Celtics were dominating the start of that series. First two games in Boston in that series were just
goodness.
And it turned on a dime. And the Celtics had a chance in game six. Rozier was great in Cleveland. Couldn't pull it out.
Yep.
Game seven down the stretch, the offense just fell apart. And that's what they've been trying to figure out ever since with a similar core here and Horford back in tow. So I don't know. Is this the year they get it done? I guess that's my last question for you, Justin. Are you feeling like you were optimistic about them the whole show?
I don't want to see it. You know, I will always take that F Boston mentality, but I think you guys are winning the title this year. Enjoy.
Well, the Cavs will be in the documentary, I guess, if that's the case. Again, shout out to prizepicks.com/CLNS. Check them out. Check out the Game Time app as well. Use our code CLNS for a discount on your first purchase. Of course, terms apply over there. And that's it. Great deep dive here with Justin Rowan. I'm sure we'll talk to him again later stages of the series. You need me at all during this series here, Justin, just give me a shout.
Maybe we could do a live show in Cleveland. That'd be a lot of fun.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Chase Down Podcast. They do an amazing job over there. Carter Rodriguez, Justin Rowan, an official podcast of the Cleveland Cavaliers going back a couple of years now.
Oh, there's my angry dog in the back.
It's that time. We're out of here. Time to go feed some dogs. Get the series started Tuesday, 7:00, game one. We'll have some practice coverage tomorrow, shoot around coverage on Tuesday. So check that out here on Celtics All Access. And some thoughts on the Cavs, I'm sure, are coming from the Celtics tomorrow morning as well. So we see you then. And we'll see you on Tuesday night for the first game. See you, Justin.
Thanks, Bobby.